A shriveled corn cob arrived in the mail with a $1,000 check, an odd delivery that would upend everything one chef thought he knew about flavor. Glenn Roberts, a rare seeds collector, was betting that this historic 8-row Flint corn could teach something profound. After reluctantly planting it and grinding it into polenta, the result was a revelation, a corn flavor so intense it lingered long after the last bite. This wasn't just better corn. It was proof that extraordinary food doesn't begin in the kitchen. It begins in the soil, in an entire agricultural landscape working in harmony. That insight sparked a radical vision, the Third Plate, a new American cuisine that could rebuild our broken food system from the ground up. Farm to table promised a revolution. Seasonality, locality, direct relationships with farmers. Chefs became heroes, connecting diners to the land and highlighting how our food choices shape the environment. But something fundamental was missing. Despite replacing menus with ingredient lists to show farmers dictating offerings, the approach still failed. Why? Because chefs were still sketching dishes first and sourcing ingredients second. Farmers were servicing the table, not the other way around. The real problem runs deeper. Unlike cuisines worldwide that evolved around grains and vegetables with minimal meat, American cuisine developed from extraction and excess. Without strong food traditions, we chase food fashions rather than sustainability. Picture three plates. The first, a massive corn-fed steak with token vegetables. The second, today's farm-to-table ideal, grass-fed steak with organic heirlooms, nearly identical in proportion. The third plate flips everything. A carrot takes center stage, with braised beef as a supporting sauce. This isn't just swapping ingredients, it's a paradigm shift requiring an entirely new cuisine, one that grows nature rather than controlling it. Klaas Martens couldn't lift his sprayer. His muscles seized violently after years of pesticide exposure. Doctors prescribed painkillers, missing the obvious connection. His wife knew better. He was being poisoned. That 1994 moment transformed their farming approach entirely. Years later, standing in Klaas's fields, a visitor learned to truly see the land. Within a small circle, Klaas identified each species: wild garlic, yellow rocket, bladder campion, chamomile, quackgrass. Weed is an arbitrary word, he insisted. These plants were messengers. Chicory signals low fertility. Milkweed means zinc deficiency. Wild garlic indicates low sulfur. Foxtail grows in poorly drained soil, thistle in compacted earth. The soil speaks directly about its needs. But there's a catch. Among the hardest lessons in farming is that too much of a good thing isn't good. Over-fertilization triggers weeds like Galansoga, which grows to balance excess nutrients. After devastating blight, an experimental Cornell tomato variety bred for disease resistance proved surprisingly delicious. This sparked a crucial question: could wheat be bred for flavor? The answer revealed a troubling truth. In thousands of breeding trials, no one had ever asked. Breeders explained they don't have a face to breed for, so they breed for yield and uniformity. Yet one breeder proved yield and flavor aren't inversely related. A French variety yielded 5 tons per acre, triple Kansas's average, while producing gorgeous, really flavorful, high-protein wheat. Older wheat varieties contain up to 50% more calcium, iron, and zinc than modern varieties. You don't eat wheat by the acre, you eat it by the slice. You'd need a whole loaf of modern bread to match half a loaf from older varieties. The tragedy of American wheat is a perfect murder, with everyone and no one responsible. By 1845, wheat flourished across New York with distinctive regional varieties, until roller mills arrived in the late 1800s. Unlike stone mills that crushed the entire kernel, roller mills separated wheat's components, removing the nutritious but perishable germ and bran. This created shelf-stable white flour that could travel long distances, but killed wheat twice, first by removing 80% of its nutrients, then by destroying its flavor. Stone-milled flour retained golden hues and nutty fragrance. Roller-milled flour became dead, chalky powder. The American prairie became collateral damage. Once covering over 40% of our country, this lush grassland was destroyed by ecological blindness. Perennial prairie wheat roots extend 8 feet deep in massive tangles, while modern wheat's roots barely reach an arm's length. Today, almost all hard wheat comes from just 2 varieties, and 6,000 Kansas towns have vanished in 80 years. Yet hope emerges through breeding work, creating new varieties that combine ancient flavor with modern disease resistance. Spain's Extremadura region hosts the Dehesa, a 13,000-square-mile agricultural system thriving for over 2,000 years. This landscape integrates 500-year-old oaks, grasslands where black Iberian pigs forage for acorns, sheep, cattle, forests, and grain cultivation. Pigs feed on grass during dry summers, then gorge on winter acorns, gaining 40% of their weight. Their exercise creates oxygenated muscles and fat deposits rich in oleic acid, producing Jamón Ibérico's extraordinary flavor. The Dehesa survived precisely because of its poverty. The land isn't quite good enough for agribusiness exploitation. At Veta La Palma, a Spanish fish farm, success is measured by flamingo bellies. The farm loses 20% of fish to birds, but manager Miguel sees this as essential. The flamingos eat the shrimp eat the phytoplankton, so the pinker the bellies, the better the system. Miguel's approach has helped Veta La Palma host 500,000 birds across 250 species, up from fewer than 50 in 1982. Filter feeding birds remove excess nutrients from agricultural runoff, balancing the system. These ancient models prove that working with nature's complexity creates more abundance and fighting against it. In 1883, a biologist claimed, "Nothing we do seriously affects the number of fish," a statement nature soon disproved. Since 1950, we've quadrupled our fish harvest, with over 85% of world stocks now fully exploited or worse. Military sonar technology, repurposed after World War II, eliminated natural protections for fish populations. Fertilizers and pesticides create over 400 dead zones worldwide, including an 8,000-square-mile disaster in the Gulf of Mexico. Climate change has caused a 40% decline in phytoplankton since 1950, microscopic plants producing half of Earth's oxygen. Chefs bear significant responsibility. One-third of American seafood is consumed in restaurants, where we demand high-level fish, salmon, halibut, cod, the steak eaters and three-car garage owners of the sea. Yet lower-level fish like sardines are among the most delicious. Angel Leon, the chef of the sea, learned from his father to examine caught fish bellies. If they contained razor clams, he'd fish where those shellfish lived. Working on fishing boats, Angel witnessed shocking waste. Out of every ton of fish caught, only 600 kilos are kept on board. The rest are dumped right back in. His mission became elevating these discarded ingredients, proving delicious fish exist far beyond the 20 species we recognize. This insight sparked a menu for 2050, a cuisine supporting entire agricultural systems rather than cherry-picking premium ingredients. It begins with milky oats tea from immature cover crops, creating consciousness about feeding the soil. Rotation risotto honors complex crop rotations, combining rye, barley, buckwheat, millet, and legumes, a nose-to-tail approach to plants. The main course flips our meat-centric strategy. Year-old parsnips are roasted and carved tableside like steaks, with braised beef shank as supporting player. Dessert celebrates community with rare black rice and beer ice cream using local barley. The menu sparked revival. A historic mill offered to grind wheat. Malting companies requested barley. Breweries inquired about spent grain for pigs. It embodies a new way of eating that could sustain us for generations. Exceptional flavor begins long before the kitchen, in soil teeming with life, in ecosystems balanced by biodiversity, in crops that build rather than deplete. Your next meal is a vote for the landscape that produced it. Choose food that supports whole farms, not just premium cuts. Celebrate the bycatch, grains, and forgotten fish that make thriving ecosystems possible. To reclaim our plates is to reclaim the soil, the sea, and the future itself.